Hello and welcome to the 9th edition of Pull the Trigger. I'm your host Trigger, and today's a little different. I feel it's hard to call it Trash Rocket. It's sort of like a two-thirds of Puff Yeah all in one room.
Could have been three, but no.
Yeah. Monster's not with us, so we've got Hodge.
Hey,
and we have John.
Hi.
So we have the drums and the bass. Just need
got the guitar. We got the rhythm section.
Yeah. Just need someone who can sing, play guitar.
I'm gonna go get our instrument.
Because it ain't me. Getting into an interesting show today. I was a little bit surprised with the music that we listened to this week. It's definitely a different direction than what we've been doing. Elton John comes in at 78 on the Apple's list. George Michael comes in at 91. I think one is too high on the list and one is too low on the list. And you all have to figure out which one is what. There's some obvious connections with the two artists. Obviously, both are from the UK, and they both have sung Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, even as a duet together.
A great version.
Yeah, maybe lesser known to everybody is that both artists are using stage names, Reginald Kenneth Dwight and Yours Karako Pinatu.
Really?
Yours Karako Pinatu, otherwise known as George Michael.
Oh, okay.
And I had to find a YouTube video and slow it down to like 0.75, then 0.5 speed when George was actually pronouncing his real name, because I was like, that's not a normal vowel and consonant usage here. But my guess is Reginald Kenneth Dwight and Yours Karako Pinatu probably not going to be household names. So it's probably good to come up with stage names.
Okay, fine.
But the word and the name Dwight is going to be coming up in the discussion. I've got some issues with that song. But of course, most of the people who truly knew George called him Yogg. Interesting enough, I kind of got obsessed with the story of George Michael more so than even the music. When I was at Ollie's last year, and they had the book written by Andrew, and it's a well-written book, and it's what I loved about it is he wasn't like somber that he lost George. It was more like that story. He was like, you know, George was my best friend, and we both loved music, and I could tell the guy was a star, and I was just here for the ride, but it was so nice to watch the guy just shoot to the moon, and it was just such a positive thing, you know, that he was just like, it was awesome. And he says what most people don't know, he's like, yeah, I might not be on all the songs of George Michael's solo stuff, but he said I'm on a good many of them. He said not credited because, you know, it's all about George, but apparently the album we're going to review today, he's apparently on it quite a bit.
So
it's basically, well, there's a couple of songs that did remind me of Wham a little bit. I was like, hey, that's kind of a throwback. Ironically, though, I found that album very surprising. It did not sound like what I thought it was going to sound like at all, because when you hear the Freedom 90 single, and that's an iconic song, so you're thinking you're going to hear a lot of songs that sound like that. You don't. That's basically the only song on there that sounds like that. In fact, most...
Yeah, it's an oddity.
It's like, but two, maybe, songs kind of up-tempo. It's pretty slow. But again, as you're going to see, I really don't mind that it's slow, because his voice can just... carry the weight.
He's a good one.
I guess before we get started, though, in somber news yet again, and in the punk world, we discovered yesterday that Brian James, guitarist and founding member of The Damned, died at age 70. No news beyond that. Brian James is basically considered the pioneer of British punk. His first single, New Rose by The Damned, was out 5 weeks before the Sex Pistols released Anarchy in the UK. So,
did not know that.
And yesterday, basically on my way to school, I listened to a whole bunch of Damned music. Damn. And kind of got misty-eyed. I was like, man, we lost David Johansen last week. Now we're losing Brian. It's not a good time to be a punk rock fan, that's for sure. But we... And happier news, We have new music releases. Unreleased material from De La Soul has seen the light. It was recorded in 1994. Mm. It's now finally released.
Okay.
A boatload of new metal albums. Most importantly, Whitechapel. If you are into heavy, heavy, heavy metal, Whitechapel. It's a killer record. Misanthrope, Eminence, just to name a few. Indie Pop Darlings, of course, in 1975, have released a live album. And interestingly enough, as of this writing and as of this podcast, the number one trending song on Apple Music is Father Figure by George Michael.
Whoa.
So that seems like a good segue to get into albums. So we should probably get started.
Okay.
First album we're doing, what was it? I said it was 78. Yeah, 78 on the list. Elton John's Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. It was on 1973. Notes for listening, vinyl, the remastered 2014 edition. We apparently have a copy of the original edition in here, original pressing. I'd be curious to compare the two, how they sound on the vinyl. I will say this, the remaster, they don't overly compress it. It breathes very well. And that was one of the things that I'm going to note a lot. I'm like, all you recorders, producers, mastering work companies, let the music breathe.
Yeah.
Let it breathe. I mean, when you go to a live show, when they play soft, it's quiet.
Dynamics.
Oh. You know, when they play loud, it's loud.
Imagine that.
Yeah. For me, that was the one thing that sticks out when we talk about dynamics, seeing Sigur Rós live. Because there is a huge dynamic in the songs. When they're playing the ballads, they're very quiet. Mm-hmm. But when he gets up there and he starts booing that guitar, it's loud. I mean, they're one of the louder bands I've seen of the major acts when they get to cranking. So I was whoa, they're not soft at all. But it was so impactful the way they used the noise.
Good shows. Yeah.
I love that kind of stuff. So, Funeral for a Friend, Love's Lies Bleeding. This apparently is, if you're an Elton John diehard and you've seen him live, apparently this is the song you ask to see live. This is apparently like a killer live track. So
okay.
I want to hear it live at this point. Mm-hmm.
Come play Fredericksburg, Elton.
Yeah, for those of you like me, who know Elton John mainly through singles, this particular tune probably made you wonder if you have an incorrect pressing of a record, because this is Elton John. It almost had a Pink Floyd-like progressive rock beginning, comes in very, very quietly, sort of almost like Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. But then it transitions into something that only Queen would write. Would you all agree to that?
Dream.
I would say, yes.
Yeah, and then it breaks into something you would expect from a 1970s rock pop album. It's an interesting way to start an album. However, I'm going to talk a lot today about album order and tracks in general. I'll finish going over my notes on this song because I wrote a book.
And they're brave too. That's a 11-minute track.
Yeah.
Well, on streaming at least.
Yeah. It's long.
It is. It's long.
That's a bold move.
But enjoyable.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But yeah, bold. Considering.
I'm going to say it was one of the stronger tunes.
For the time period, it wasn't bold, maybe?
Yeah, I guess the age of Pink Floyd,
but I know James, but yeah.
I'm going to assume that
The
studio had some very good drugs. Very good drugs.
I'm pretty sure they were all doing it too.
Aspirin. Yeah. Oh, ibuprofen.
Yeah, very good drugs. it's an interesting way to start the album, and I feel that this is a great start, and there's some great tunes on this album. One, the track order. I don't know. There's too much, quote, gear shifting on this album. I feel like it goes here, 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 too much.
Yes.
One of the biggest takeaways, though, I'm noticing again, the dynamic range of the song. There are some very loud parts on this record.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was cranking. I had to find my remote, turn the volume down, because I know my neighbors were not probably thrilled with how loud I was cranking it. And I'm like, if it's too loud, you're too old.
But wait, it's Mr. Elton John.
The problem is, I think I'm like 10 to 15 years older than they are. So,
oh, man. Seriously? So they're going to give you the loud thing.
So, but the volume is allowed to vary greatly. And I love that. And I think this is why when you have that argument of vinyl versus CD, mm-hmm. this is what people are arguing. It has nothing to do with the format. It's how we record. The compression, or in this case, the lack thereof, allows this song, and well, the entire album, to really breathe.
True.
Yeah.
And it does breathe.
It breathes, oh, breathes very well. Actually, I'll say that both of the albums today that we listened to, I thought had some pretty good dynamics. Obviously, the George Michael is in the 90s, and not as good. We're starting. But like I said,
it was compression wars, or whatever they call it.
Yeah, the loudness wars. We're not there yet, but we're closing in on it. Ironically, though, we're listening to an album recorded completely analog versus an album recorded completely digitally. And I was really sort of surprised when I saw that. It's like, this is entirely digital, because it doesn't sound... when you hear a Nine Inch Nails record, for example, it sounds digital. Wouldn't you agree?
No, totally analog.
Oh, yeah, it's so warm and inviting. But I'm getting that.
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying.
Everything sounds just so computerized. The records we listen to today don't sound like that. So, do we want to get to the next track? Or do we want to keep going?
Oh, just keep talking about it?
I would say
it's such a great track. I do wish there was so much more to say. But.
I was surprised because, I brought this album with me. It was in my parents' album collection, and I kind of...
Stole it,
but I didn't get into it as much as I thought that. I would have, because, I am an Elton John fan, but I kind of grew up on his 80s stuff.
See,
and whatever was on the radio, like, I knew, like, the five big hits off of this album. I already knew that, the first time I really listened to it all the way through was to prepare for this.
I don't want you to lose that thought. I wanted you to hold on to that thought when you said the 80s stuff, because that was something I said later on this record when I was listening to it. I was like, okay. I see why this record is on the list now. But
I remember the first time hearing the album thinking, hey, it probably works with the name of the... you can conjure up imagery and such, even with the... tied to like Wizard of Oz there and everything.
Oh yeah, the album cover stare at it as a kid, and it's definitely a good intro for the
hearing it for the first time and knowing him for the hits,
mm-hmm.
like you said, from that era all the way to Your Song and such, all the way through the 90s, and even when Lion King was in.
Yeah,
I got the right, and then hearing that first track for the first time, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is pretty awesome. It's one of my faves, and I really don't know every song from his discography, so I may find others,
But you know what I find interesting?
I love it.
Now, I don't know if you all know about Elton John's proficiency about getting albums out.
Oh, yeah.
His mm-hmm. first album was 1969. This album is 73. It's his seventh album, and he gets another album out by the end of the year. He has 8 albums from 69 to 73.
And I looked it up online. He had one that came out in January of 73, and this was, I think, October? November.
That's when they allowed that stuff.
Yeah. He's cranking them out. And
speaking of, like, in the 90s, when they wouldn't let Prince do such a thing.
And I'm going to argue later on that he shouldn't have done that. I feel
okay,
because there's 52 tracks recorded for this session. 52. And there's another album, right?
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap. So... yeah, well, I'll get into that because
stay tuned.
I've got some. This is one of my. This is an album that it's like the songs I really like, I think, are great, and the songs that there's some songs that I just like. Why did this even get off? Mm-hmm. Why did this get the go ahead?
I would say, as a 48-year-old listening to it all the way through for the first time, it's a great opener.
Oh, yeah.
I've absorbed a lot of prog rock since being a little kid looking at this album, so it was enjoyable.
No, the first track, though, it's strong. That one definitely belongs on the album. And where it's positioned is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, but my issue is where a lot of the other tracks are, it's not right, including our next track, Candle in the Wind.
Mm-hmm. What?
I feel like that is a very, very strange... shift
coming after that first
track. I would have flipped Benny and the Jets and Candle in the Wind.
Okay.
Mainly because Benny and the Jets is such a ridiculous, like, Sgt. Pepper's first opening track,
which would have probably gone right hand in hand with the first track.
And that's another song I don't get it. we'll get into that. Everyone loves it. I'm like, this song is so stupid. But everyone's all about it. So I guess, what do I know?
And he's telling me this earlier, and I had to add, well, it's actually Andy and the Tuna. Office fans would know.
But again, Candle in the Wind, this is a staple, obviously, if you're an Elton John fan. Yes. Maybe even if you're not an Elton John fan, you probably know this one.
Wasn't it even a later version, the England Rose?
Yeah, he did one for Princess Diana.
Yeah.
He also did a live version of this one.
Mm-hmm. This, okay.
And I think it was just him and the piano. I wish it was like 91, 92. Mm-hmm. Oh. Way better than this one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gotcha.
That was the one where I was like, ooh, there's so much emotion there. It's almost like it's hitting me in the feels. This one, I see where he's going with it. And again, you know, Bernie and Elton wrote great lyrics. The story of Marilyn Monroe is told very, very well.
Right.
So, and I'm going to say that this album sort of like the paint by numbers that would later be better Elton John, because I'm sitting there thinking Tiny Dancer, how well that song A breathes, but how well the emotion hits. And I feel this particular track, what's holding it back, it just feels like he's singing it, these are the words, I need to get it done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do.
To add to that, from what I found online, they recorded the whole album in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they were having studio issues before that. So they kind of, it was like a rush job. So I could see maybe that's why it sounds like.
And 52 songs in
time. Yeah. Like if they did The Unfortunate, had a deadline already.
Yeah. And there is a classic albums episode on this album.
Yeah.
That's floating around.
Okay.
I mean, I could see that making sense. Maybe that's why it's, to me, it feels a little flat, was what I said.
I agree too. I think I'm used to the live version.
Yeah, it sounded, you just hear that and you're like, damn, that song is just, all the feels. And then, like I said, I'm switching this with Benny and the Jets. I feel as Benny and the Jets is such a ridiculous track, coming out of a ridiculous track, but it also slows the tempo down. Then you could get to the serious song, and I feel that would, for the listener, it would have been better. I don't know. Perfect. That's just my take. Other than that, I don't know. It's a huge hit, though. I guess we should talk about it, right? Benny and the Jets? Mm-hmm. I always get Sgt. Pepper vibes on this.
Danny and
it always reminds me of the opening track of Sgt. Pepper. It's just like a ridiculous, piped-in crowd noise. This song's utterly ridiculous.
Wait, it's not real? Crowd noise? Not really.
I found this song rather annoying. I always have. Nothing's changed.
Oh, nothing ever.
It would be a great bridge between track one and two. Or you could leave it on the cutting room floor.
I mean, this could be on our socials.
So what do I know?
He will give you a new track order on our socials then.
Yeah.
That'd be cool, actually.
So that would be, I would love to take this album and the other 73 album. Like, what's good on that album? What's good on this record?
Yeah.
Put them all on one album and just say, here we go. I feel if Elton does that, I think we look at Elton John the same way we look at the Beatles, the same way we look at Rolling Stones.
In this mega album, would like Love Lies Bleeding still be the first track?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No question.
I'm all for it then.
Yeah. What? No question.
Yeah, Benny and the Jets, as a kid, I loved this song.
Yeah.
And maybe because I'm a drummer too. There's something about the piano riff with the clapping, just a groove to it. I don't know. It got me as a kid. That's one of the things I liked about it. How
it makes it for a good sample. The Beastie Boys used it with Biz Markie.
And okay, I haven't looked it up recently, but I know that there's a clip of him performing it on Soul Train.
I would be interested to hear that.
Yeah.
That's probably on YouTube. I didn't bother to
look. I wondered if I actually heard it live or a different version of it, if I'd have a different opinion. I just...
Kind of like Candle with the Wind.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah.
Candle
like,
in the Wind. Just like Candle with the Wind.
But like you said, it was a big hit.
Yeah, it's a huge hit.
And it's still one of the...
Yeah, it's one of the ones everyone wants to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there, of all the songs that he has, like, I'm still standing. You know, one, or the one, I should say. Hell, even the Lion King stuff.
He was on MTV Unplugged and he did a version. It was just he and his piano, and that's a
another
good version. Me too. Yeah, it is. Actually, remember his song, the last song?
Yeah.
For the AIDS. That always gets me every time I hear it.
Well, I remember, was it 93, 94? He came out with the one album. That's this the single of that. That's an amazing track. Like the way you talk about drumming, like it's not a complicated drum riff, but the way they're recorded, it just adds so much to the song. I love it when instruments matter so much that you don't need to come up with like this ridiculous fill. That doesn't have to be in, you know, 16/8 time or whatever, you know. So it's just like, you know, that where that drum hits, where that little reverb and where that little delay hits on the snare just matters. And just the way it combines with his vocal is
that's cool too.
So I'm sitting there and I think of songs like that, and then we go to Benny and the Jets, and like
and he's in the front row standing up, turning around the crowd going, "What is wrong with all of you?"
Why this song?
Yeah, I am a big fan of Nigel Olsen's drum sound, and just playing in general. He's definitely one of those guys you don't hear too much about.
Nope. And then I switched the sides because we finished side A. There's only three tracks because the first one is 11 minutes long.
Yeah.
It just keeps going and going. But the thing is, I will say this, it didn't feel like 11 minutes.
No, it's cool.
It's one of those things, I like it. I was saying earlier, a lot of the Cure songs, it can be really long. Most of the time, they don't feel long. That one does the same thing, I guess, because there's enough interesting stuff there that...
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, it keeps it going.
So we're going to
the elements all the time.
Yep. Yeah. We're going to the title track, "Goodbye Yellow Brick Road." Strong, strong track. Strong track. I'm coming out like, I love how this comes out. Definitely an Abbey Road feel to the melody, the strings, the guitar. It's that's George, straight up. That is totally George's playing style. I really think that Elton was listening to the way Paul McCartney played piano in the Beatles, especially towards the later years, because I get that Paul McCartney sort of chord structure. Elton sings the chorus over the melody here just perfectly. It floats.
Yeah.
It's a good name for the album because this is a great track. It's one of the stronger ones on the album, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one I've always loved since I was a kid.
I think it's one of the first ones I remember knowing it was him, you know, as a kid.
It's strong.
I remember when I was younger in the early YouTube days, I was always trying to find a good live version of it from back then. I haven't tried to look recently, but it sounds ridiculous, but there is a good live version of it from the Muppet Show appearance he did back in the 70s.
I bet that's awesome.
Yeah, the Muppets.
I am convinced anything with Kermit the Frog is automatically good.
I remember thinking, I was like, that's one of the Kermit. Few live versions of that song that I've heard, and it didn't sound bad vocally. Yeah.
Right.
So,
because I'm thinking, like, what's my favorite Weezer song? "Gone Fishing." Why is it my favorite Weezer song? Because the Muppets are in the video, and it's a good tune. But
yeah.
Muppets make everything better. I think I'm just a kid.
Yeah, it's like
I'm an adult, but I'm a kid.
But yeah, goodbye Yellow Brick Road is definitely a go-to.
Oh yeah. This is it's strong.
If I were to turn somebody on to Elton, I'd be like, "Well, listen."
That's
to song.
One I'm going. Yeah, that's one I'm definitely going to.
"Love Lies Bleeding." Come on. No, I know what you're saying.
I'd probably hold on to that. I'm just kidding.
It took me 48 years to hear it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, who want to get into Tool? What should I hear? Schism.
Oh wow. I really thought you were going to say to get into Tool. "Goodbye Yellow Brick Road." What? No.
He's like, why Schism? Because it's a waltz. That guy ruined it for me. Daggone it. He's like, "You know Schism's a waltz?" And I was like, "No, it's not." And then he started counting it out. And then I started, "Son of a bitch, it's a waltz."
Sorry.
I like to sit there. Every time I hear it, I start.
He does.
I think about ballroom dancing.
Yeah, why isn't it in more ballroom dancing situations?
Like, Jesus. But yeah.
Okay, anyway, yeah.
But yeah, no, this is definitely a song you'd get people into it with Elton. The next one is "The Song Has No Title." That's a weird way of writing untitled.
It is.
Elton on the piano is the opener. The flutes come in. And it's definitely those wood flutes that I really, really love. And I love how minimal that the song's beginning is. That minimalism brings an intensity that I found lacking in a lot of this album. The progression of this song is absolutely perfect. Again, it's another great tune. Definitely more Beatles vibe going on here. that. And another thing that I noticed, side B, side D. Those, I felt, were the strongest songs on the album. Side A, side C, I could, like, chuck and not miss them. It's weird. Other than the first track.
I was going to say, wait.
Other than the first track, yeah. I mean, got the first track, then we're going to side B.
Okay.
Like, then we've got to... Then we're talking about number five. It definitely was a Beatles vibe going on here. I feel like this was the ode to Abbey Road. Maybe that's why Abbey Road is three on this list. Because I think I've mentioned Abbey Road probably more times than any album we've discussed. And I just keep hearing it. I keep hearing it. And my thing is, I don't even think it's the Beatles' best record. Mm. The one that I think is the best record is also on the list, but Revolver.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's amazing. And if you can hear it in mono, holy crap.
I tried to bring it up during the Downward Spiral, and he just shook his head. No.
I'm just
kidding. It won't come up during this one.
The Downward Spiral's in mono?
Okay, anyway.
You're circling down the one drain, not two anymore.
Yeah, I could definitely hear the Beatles influence. I mean, Elton John's talked about being...
Oh, yeah, he had to be.
Buddies with John Lennon and just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, these two are definitely... I'm hearing it. The next one, to me, had that... this was an Elton John song.
Mm-hmm.
Gray Seal. When I think of Elton John, I think of songs like this. I feel like this song influenced his... musical writing going forward. I'm going to say that several times on this album. I feel this was a blueprint for him going forward. The structure is so classic. It's a true Elton pop song. I hear this structure in his duet with Kiki D, Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely sort of that same, not necessarily the same chord progression, but the way he transitions the chords the same way.
And she's on this album too.
Yeah.
I saw that in the liner notes.
So it's definitely...
foreshadowing.
Yeah, it's definitely, you can, I feel like you can hear him develop, because if you listen to the album prior to this, he's definitely more the serious singer-songwriter that you don't have the playfulness that you have on this particular album.
Right.
But I feel after he heard this, I think something clicked, and he was like, hey, I've got an idea. We need to build on these structures. Mm-hmm. Hell, it works.
Yeah.
Made a lot of money after this album, so.
Yeah, I definitely gravitated towards this one.
Yep.
It's definitely a good, deep cut album track that I would tell somebody to listen to.
Yeah, and then I would say, all right, now listen to this single, listen to this single, listen to this single. Do you see where he's coming from?
Mm.
And now we got to get to the song that I have got a real problem with. It's Jamaica Jerk Off. Point blank, this song should never have been on the album. Like, and everyone's going to say, Trigger, you got to look at it from the lens of 1973. Okay.
Trigger, you got to look at it from the lens of... No, I'm just kidding.
All right, we'll go with that. Okay.
I don't really believe what I just said.
The album's been re-released.
They had chances to keep it on.
They had chances to say, hey, as time has reflected.
Or at least change, as you pointed out, who it's credited to.
Yeah, there's a whole lot here that I have some issues with. If he records this track 30 years later, he's canceled.
Yep.
I mean, he'd never get out of the light of day. Even in the liner notes, it is written by Reggae Dwight, which, by the way, Dwight is the last name of Elton John, and Toots Taupin. That's racist as shit. There's a lot of appropriation in this song. It's full of racial tropes. And, well, I just thought it sucked. I know I'm supposed to be impartial, but I don't have anything better to say about it. Sorry, not sorry.
Oh, it's fine.
I don't have any history with that song, and I felt that it was out of place too. Although for 1973, it seemed like a lot of white artists were doing a lot of reggae.
Yep.
I know Paul McCartney was.
Yep.
Right.
So I guess maybe that's why it's on the album for the time.
But even when you think about it, like The Clash, for example. Now they got into performing it more along the lines because their drummer was such...
The Police a little later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the drummer was saying he was such a drunk. He was like, I couldn't play for an entire show. So he was like, I was listening to a reggae record, and apparently Joe heard it. He's like, why don't we do some of that? So they traveled to Jamaica, they went to the dance halls, and they really gained an appreciation for it versus and with permission from people who made it, and they didn't really appropriate anything. They still kept it the Clash while using the elements of. This is just straight up. Yeah, this one should have been on the cutting room floor.
I feel like from what I've read up about the album, a lot of partying was going on.
Oh, for sure.
So I'm sure it came out of all of that.
Because didn't a good bit of this album get recorded in Jamaica, or attempted to?
Yeah, I think they attempted.
Yeah. The next track, though, it does redeem itself for a bit. I think it was one of those songs that I was a little confused. I've seen that movie too. It's the perfect title for the song. The melody reminds me of some of the mellower parts of the title track. Mm-hmm. It's another track. At the beginning, I have hitting the cutting room floor, and at the end, I've kind of changed my mind. My issue again, there's enough songs on this album with this tempo and feel, and then I thought about it. I've seen that movie too. Maybe that's the point. And you've heard this before, right? Here you go. Again, going back to the parting thing. Oh, guys, got an idea. What if I use this song again, but put different lyrics on it? And someone was like, go for it.
Wow.
Like a Beavis and Butthead producer moment. I don't know. Yeah, that'd be cool. But yeah, the song is knowing what people are going to do because they've done it before. I feel maybe that's the point of the song. Now, the issue that I had, the song does have a spacey feel to it, but I feel somehow it manages to lack atmosphere. Does that make any sense?
I can see that.
I feel like when I think of like atmosphere, even a band who, you know, doesn't strike my fancy all that much, there's definitely that atmosphere there. I feel like somehow it didn't get recorded here.
Okay, right, okay. Like it was, and there's that bird again. Yeah. And yeah, it doesn't.
I don't know the song well enough to comment.
It was just, it's a strange use of reverb and delay. I think it was, hey, if we use reverb, it'll work, but they picked the wrong one.
Yeah, that could maybe be it too.
Or pick the wrong amount of it. I'm not really sure. But, you know, it's okay.
I didn't feel the need to skip it.
Yeah.
Like, I had it playing in the background. I was like, that's not a bad song. But, yeah.
Here's one of the songs that actually... Sweet Painted Lady, by the way. It's going to be one of the songs, at least the way the piano is structured. There's a couple of them. That sort of remind me of Hunky Dory by David Bowie.
Okay.
The way that... I always felt like David Bowie, when he plays a piano, I always get the feeling of, like, when you take a paintbrush and you dip it in paint and then just sling it onto a canvas. I feel like that's how David plays the piano. It's sloppy, but it's got a purpose. And Elton does it perfect here, but it's, again, mid-tempo. It's lackadaisical in the way he sings it. I do love the muted trumpet in the background, though. I feel that's an awesome addition. And the accordion, I would have never said, hey, you know what? Trumpet and accordion. I don't think I would have come up with that. Mm-hmm. But again, this is where I said, this album needs to go somewhere soon.
Or else.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... I'm starting to like... So... But luckily, they do. There is a change.
They do.
Next up is The Ballad of Danny Bailey. 1909-34. Again, I like the change-up with the more guitar, the more bass guitar. It's very welcome. Beatles again. Mm-hmm. Harmony and the harmonizing vocals. And I said, is Abbey Road so high on the list? Because so many albums from this list are borrowing harmonies from it. I mean, I want to say, this is what, 6 of 9 episodes, and I've said something about Abbey Road. I'm like, well, what do I know? All right, so, but another thing that I marked here, where Elton's voice is in the mix on this particular track is very good. The recording dynamics I felt really shine on this song, like the volume of loud, soft, where the instruments are just breathing. And the outro to this song is awesome. Mm-hmm. Killer outro.
That was a good outro.
Yeah. So great time to put this. This was a great place to put the song, maybe. There's just too many of that mid-tempo on here. It's starting to get a little old. Didn't we talk about Prince earlier today?
We did.
Before off topic, or not off topic, off mic.
Right.
The next track's Dirty Little Girl, and I feel that Prince heavily borrowed from this song to make Darling Nikki.
How do I know?
I mean, lyrically, the tempo, the choppiness, the slog in its movement. Prince heard this and he's like, I'm going to make this my song, but I'm building it off that. The first thing I did when I hear it, that's Darling Nikki. So the lyrical content, again, same vein.
Okay.
The dynamics are great, though. I love the volume changes. I said, to you producers and mastering agents, do you hear this? Songs can breathe. Music varies in volume. Let it happen. I also feel if someone was listening to Ziggy Stardust, released in 72, during the recording, because there are some moments that definitely give me some Ziggy vibes.
I'm not much of a lyric guy.
Yeah.
So when I was listening to it for the first time, I was thinking maybe it's about something else. Like,
yeah.
Is he talking about like maybe a dog or something? Like but then I looked at the lyrics. I was like, oh no, it's exactly.
Yeah, what yeah, yeah. It's exactly what.
I thought maybe he was being clever with the lyrics, no, making it seem no, one it, way. But it, no, it's really
that way. It's definitely like I'm thinking when I think, what's the precursor to Darling Nikki? Here you go.
Because which Beatles song did Paul write about his dog?
I have no idea.
Here I bring it up.
Helter Skelter?
No.
No. That song has some history, but
not about a dog.
Yeah, there is a song about his dog.
I'm sure there is, and I'll probably remember it at 2 a.m. and I'll be like, hey, what's that? Because that's how I think.
And he'll quickly record a very quick 30-second thing to add to the
So another song we're going to get into here, Blueprints. I feel like I'm saying this word a lot. Blueprint.
Yes.
Blueprint. This is definitely the Blueprint album for sure for Elton John. It's All the Girls Love Alice.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. I'm Still Standing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that song was built off this one. That was what I heard right off the bat. That's exactly the same build and movement and motion. It's a great tune. It's a nice follow-up from the previous track. The album's picking up tempo, and that's good because I was getting bored. The second verse is interesting, though, because like it's fast, and there's one verse slow, and then it picks right back up to the aggressive up-tempo nature.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool. And then we're going to... Oh, yeah. I think that was the last song on side C.
Whoa.
Really quick, I looked it up. Martha, My Dear is about Paul McCartney's dog.
That makes sense. Never thought of it, but it makes sense. You know, you're like, okay. Yeah, I could see that.
White Album, which was a double album too, like this one.
Not on the list, which a lot of people would argue should be, because I know that's a divisive album for Beatles fans. They either love it or you hate it, and I'm weird because I'm in the middle. I'm like, I don't love it, I don't hate it. There's some great tracks on there. There's definitely some tracks that should not have made it.
Yeah,
I agree. Number nine.
Yep.
Number nine.
Yep.
Number nine. What? Who gave that the green light? Okay. I just feel
when I realized one of the tracks from that album was used as the theme song for the 80s show Life Goes On.
Oh, bloody. Life Goes On.
Revolution Number One was never my favorite either.
No.
I prefer the electric version.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Way better. The fuzzy. Oh, yeah. That's a killer tune. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go home and listen to that tonight.
You heard it here first.
All right, so we're on to side D, and it comes out banging. Your sister can't twist, but she can rock and roll. This is the fastest song on the album by far. What I love is it borrowed the melodies of the 1950s with the production of the 70s. The organ is killer. Elton's just bringing the fire on the microphone. I have a lot to unpack here. I can hear this song's influence on artists from Meatloaf to Elvis Costello.
Okay.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah. Meatloaf, his entire Bad Out of Hell record, he's ripping his off. He made a whole damn career out of ripping the song off. Elvis Costello, I think what he heard was the guitar tones and the dry keyboards. Like, they are dry. And there's no reverb, no nothing. And Elvis was like, I don't want the bombacity of these 70s records, because he's definitely of the middle finger to traditional music. But he borrowed from it. And yeah, I heard both. Love the tune, though. I just love the intensity. It just comes out. It's fun, but it's like, boom. There should have been more tracks on here like this, I think, to break up some of the...
Right, right. Why not?
To break up some of the slow. It's a great tune. Mm-hmm. Speaking of great tunes,
what?
My favorite song on the album, period, the end, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. This track kicks ass. I don't care if you're an Elton John fan or not. This song kicks ass.
And it's Saturday.
Yeah. It's rock side. It's definitely the rock album. It's less frantic than the other song. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. I always think of going skating on a skating rink where you buy two, get one free hot dogs and Cokes. I always think that when I hear this song. Hmm. I don't know why. I'm like, buy two, get one.
And that was a guarantee you're going to hear that at every live show, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I feel like a lot of barbecues, well, you'll still hear that song.
Oh, okay.
If you're having a cookout with your friends, someone's probably playing it.
I think they used it for sporting events, too, at one point. Yeah.
I mean, it just works. It's a great track. What I love about it, also, like, some of the lyrics on some of the previous tracks are so heavy, and this is just not. It's a light, fun song. Have fun. Then we get into one that everyone's going to make fun of me for, so...
Oh, here we go. Ahead. Get ready, John. We're going to make fun of you.
Here we go. Roy Rogers. Son of a bitch. It's another mid-tempo song.
Oh,
interesting,
man.
Use of lap steel. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The progression sounds similar to the title track, but it isn't as good.
No. Oh.
I'm telling Elton to pick one of the two. Pick one. Oddly enough, though, if this song was given to Willie Nelson, this song would have been a hit. I hear it as a Willie Nelson tune, which also makes sense because Nelson's acoustic guitar is named after Roy Rogers' horse, Trigger.
Trigger!
Do you know how many times as a kid I have heard, do you know where Roy is?
See, I have no knowledge of Roy Rogers.
That's going to be a sample on future episodes.
Son of a bitch. When I saw that, I was like, oh man, someone is going to say something about it. I know Trigger was Roy Rogers' horse. Yes, I know that Willie Nelson's acoustic guitar is named Trigger. And if you didn't know that, now you do.
Willie Nelson played you. Hey, you're still around. It's not too late to record this song.
Yeah, he's only like 106. Oh, I mean, I think he's going to live forever. For his age and for the way he's lived, he looks pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Oh, now the next song is a masterclass in production. Social Disease. The dynamics. What I love is the song starts off with that low fidelity, quietly, and it just breathlessly builds in its fidelity and builds to the volume that you want to hear it at. Because for a minute there, I thought, like, something wrong with my record? Because, like, this is a lot quieter, and then it just started filling in.
Ah, there it is.
Cool use of the banjo. So we've got some country instruments here, right? The last one, lap steel. This one, banjo.
True.
Again, this is another one where I think Elton is going forward. This is a blueprint song.
Okay.
And this is where I'm like, maybe this album is so important. There's not much for what this album is, but more for what it showed us what Elton and Bernie could write and do going forward. The saxophone solo is interesting. I don't know if you noticed this, but when you hear a saxophone in general, You think warm, right? It's a warm instrument.
Generally, yeah.
It's mic'd in a way, it sounds right for the song, but it lacks the warmth of, say, like a John Coltrane. Of course, this is warm and biting, but it's still warm. Which we'll get into, because he is on the list, John Coltrane.
Right.
That is going to be my probably ultimate geek out day when we do those two records, the John Coltrane and the Miles Davis. There is going to be some fanboying going on for there.
You've been warned.
Yeah, those are especially Kind of Blue. Oh man, that's an amazing record. Harmony.
Harmony
is the last song.
Yes.
This is exactly what Bowie would write as a ballad for Hunky Dory. Definitely someone made note of Bowie on this song. It screams Bowie.
I enjoyed this one a lot.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good closer.
Bowie.
Yeah, even the way the song presents itself, it's almost as if you're painting by slinging the paint from a brush onto the canvas. That's where I made the note of it. And I always felt like David Bowie was doing just that when he played piano for a song. I don't know if I'm using it for a closer, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a good song. I just don't know if that's... Because it's... You know, the opener is this great big opus, and the closer is the most simple song probably on the entire album. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the point, though. Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
You're going by that.
You've left the Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah, I saw online, too. Hmm. He was trying to release it as a single, but they stopped him because it was too close to... Caribou.
Oh, that's why it was.
Yeah.
According to the internet.
Well, hey.
Yeah.
Internet never lies.
Do we want to go to final notes on this particular track or album?
Oh.
Or do we want to keep talking about songs?
I would definitely recommend this to anybody that wanted to get into a full album by Elton John.
Yeah.
It's a good starter, I think.
That's
other than a greatest hits package.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was going with it. I was like, I don't want to discredit the legend that is Elton John, because there are some wonderful tracks on this album.
Mm-hmm.
There are some great ballads, and there's some killer rock tracks. And you can tell it's a blueprint for Elton going forward. The later hits obviously use that structure that's very, very similar to the tunes here. This album doesn't need to be 1 hour and 17 minutes long, though. It just doesn't. There's another album in 1973... Elton and Bernie should have really, in my opinion, focused on hammering out the songs they truly wanted. Quality, not quantity. I'm wondering if you took the tracks that are great from all of the albums from 69 to 73, released them only one album of the better tracks per year, if Elton isn't even a bigger star than he is now.
Okay.
Because the only way I can put it to is a guy who... whose name rhymes with Shmryan Shmradams, who over the last 5 years has released something along the lines of 12 to 14 albums, trying to make some money because he's broke.
Oh, but not to be confused with the other one that rhymes with that.
Yeah, not the one who's at the five and dime.
Right.
Yeah, the one who...
He's done that? Oh, last five years?
Yeah, he's released one third of his entire album discography in the last 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he is. Okay. I mean, like, I'm probably sure by the time we end this podcast, he'll have two more albums out.
Hello. He could turn them out, that's true.
And he'll have a punk rock record, a hip hop record, a death metal record, a country rock record, and still not apologize for what he did.
I was going to say a cover album of Mandy Moore hits.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, you just reminded me, though. I want to take back what I just said about this being a good introduction. I think Elton John's first greatest hits package is probably a good intro of, here, listen to this.
That's where I would probably go. Greatest hits, then start there, and then hit it. Do you see where these songs come from? Because I feel...
Oh, because we had said, like, if you've never heard Elton, you don't want to start with Love Life, please.
Yeah.
Well,
unless they happen to like that stuff.
Yeah, to prepare for today was the first time I really listened to the whole album all the way through.
Yeah. I've given it a few listens. I don't think I've ever sat down, other than the last two times I've listened to it, to really just sit down and listen to it. And for me, it was like, it's too long. But it's a good album. There's a hint of what's to come for Elton. But I do feel like this album ranks higher than some albums that I feel are truly complete with no bad tracks. Okay. I'm looking at Nina Simone's I Put a Spell on You. Yeah. This album is not better than that album. Sorry. I've got to disagree with that highly. Because that's, for me, a top 20 all time. So there are some tunes that are kind of meh or just downright awful and offensive. Yeah, I'm putting this somewhere about 80. If I was going to put, well, the album's on this list, I'm putting it around 80.
Oh, okay.
That's where I think it belongs on the list for sure. Where it is a little too high. Next album is the exact opposite. It's 91 on the list, and I'm like, should be a lot higher. A lot higher. Because this isn't, I wouldn't say I'm quite onto the Aretha Franklin first time hearing that, but we're not far off. This album's great. It's George Michael's Listen Without Prejudice, Volume 1, 1990. I want to thank the public library. My internet's been out all day. So they had a copy at the Howell Branch. Checked it out. Listened to it. Brought it back. So thank you, public library. And you want to talk about punk rock? Having a library card is punk rock as anything gets.
That's true.
So, I guess liner note, a listening note CD.
Sorry.
Praying for Time is the opening track. It opens with a cinematic ballad. George's voice is mixed in the microphone with a lower fidelity when he whispers, and it returns to a higher fidelity when he starts to really belt out the notes. And man, does that matter.
Yes.
Like, he's coming out the gate. How this guy's not... I want to say this a lot. Why does nobody talk about George Michael when we talk about great singers? We hear about the classic tropes like Frank Sinatra, you know, Freddie Mercury, no doubt great singers, but George Michael's voice, it's not just the dynamics that he has, it's just how he effortlessly goes from soft to loud, high to low.
Right.
He's not struggling, and I don't think he's trained. He's just can do it. I'm like, the entire time, that's all I keep saying. I was like, damn, how does he hit that note? Or how did he think? He's like, I should hit that note here. And he's still in key and it works. I'm going to say this a lot.
A lot.
This album this album is like 90% mind blown.
Okay.
And Aretha was 100%. This is 90%. So that's a pretty good rating.
Yeah.
It's definitely an album I'm going to go buy after hearing it. Which I love when I hear an album that I hear for the first time, and I feel like, oh shit, I've slept on this one. Mm-hmm. This I've slept on a lot. And I feel like everyone's sleeping on George Michael, on his talent. This guy could flip and sing. Another thing, I don't know if y'all heard it, the French horn that's very subtly put in there in the middle and in the outro. Did y'all hear that?
In track one?
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to go back and listen to that.
It's just brief. It's an easy way into the album. And in a sense, I know I'm a Cure fan, so I'm just going to go ahead and say it. It gave me sort of the same feel as Plain Song.
Mm.
That emotional, just huge synth layer, perfect way to get into a record.
Yeah, I can hear that.
But the next song sounds nothing like Pictures of You. So,
no.
But this is another song that, you know, I kind of ignored in the 90s, and I guess it's because there were so many songs in the 90s that had this sort of piano sound. But now when I listen to it, I'm like, man, I really miss this song completely. And that's Freedom 90.
And I was impressed all the models sounded like George Michael.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, the video.
I would
good
say
song, though.
Outside of Faith and Father Figure, this is probably George's most well-known song as
this
a solo
be
artist.
A bit on Faith or something.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
About track one.
Yeah.
Praying for Time. Did you get Beatle vibes from that? John Lennon solo.
Bit, yeah, a little bit.
Okay, okay.
That's what I thought when I heard it when I was 13 years old. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's got a John Lennon vibe to it.
It's like if John Lennon joined The Cure, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe it was a drum sound.
Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, I could hear it. For me, I was getting, I was like, it's that perfect sort of like ethereal intro.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
But yeah, Freedom 90, the piano part, I never paid attention to it until I had to listen to it for the, like when I was younger.
That
loop. I think I was more focused on the rhythm, the drum part.
Yeah, that loop is perfect.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
Yes.
One
of those songs that would still last time I was DJing a lot for playing, you know, what would be considered not retro, but you know, old tracks for the youngins, but they liked it a lot. Whitney Houston did too, but okay.
Yeah, sorry folks, apparently I'm getting text messages on my computer and I guess I forgot
it's to all tell of our them. Listeners. Hi guys.
Yeah, no, it's my coworker. Wondering if I have my lesson plans ready for Monday, and the answer is no.
No.
I do remember in 1991 when MTV turned 10, they had a special, which is probably on YouTube. George Michael did perform the song on their acoustic.
Which is hilarious because he shits all over MTV on this song.
Yeah.
So, no.
This, if you want an autobiography of George, here you go. I still, though, there's like in the build of the chorus, I've always wondered if that was him trying to allude to the fact that he was gay. Like he was like, there's something that, you know, sometimes the clothes do not make the man all we have to do. Now.
Yep.
Not just artistic freedom. I thought that too,
listening to it 30 something years later, I was like, oh, that's him talking about it.
Yeah.
Without people knowing.
He was like, there's something about me that you don't know.
A couple songs on this album are that way.
And George's voice, damn. Like, it's always striking on this song, the choral loops, though, of his voice, but it's like, when I sat there and I really just cranked it today, because that was when the neighbors were power washing, so I didn't care.
Ha ha, neighbors.
Volume goes up.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, man. Like, the voice, how it's sharp, how it's soft, how it's high, how it's big. Like, this is like a deluxe version of George Michael all in one song. If you want to encapsulate what can he do as a singer, this is the song I'm giving you.
Yeah.
Because, man, that and the cover of the Queen cover that he did for the tribute, which might even be, I hate to say it, better than Freddie's.
Which one did he do?
The live show he did with them? Yeah, the two or three songs.
Someone to Love, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Because he hit every note.
He did the Queen song 39, too, at the same show, which is, I'm not sure, but it's got to be on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. He did two or three songs.
But, I mean, they could have totally...
They could have toured with them. And for I'm surprised they didn't do that.
Yeah, that's another thing that I'm always like, if they were... He could have even talked with Freddie about it. Like, hey, man, you know, and we know you want to keep doing the thing because he really wanted to get that last album out. And I think he got all the way to the very end. And then there was some other songs he was recording after that. And then he couldn't finish that record. But I think someone should have said, hey, what if George... I think Freddie would have been cool with it. I think he would have.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think Freddie had a great respect.
Yeah, I'm a big Queen fan, too. Yeah. And I've heard interviews with band members saying that they would confuse George Michael for Freddie Mercury on the radio because they had similar
voices. Oh, yeah, similar timbers, voices. Yeah, range. But, yeah, no. Oh, and when I heard... And now I really get chills when I hear that. I was like, holy shit, that is... By far, he was by far the best performer at that show.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even close. I mean, I get it that Guns N' Roses also really like Queen, and they did their thing, but George stole it.
Yeah, when this album came out, I hadn't really gotten into Queen yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, album cuts until, you know, Wayne's World came out in 92. This came out in 90. Listening to this album now, I'm like, whoa, I can really hear that Queen influence all over the place. Which was what I didn't like about this album when I first heard it, because there was too much, I was expecting up-tempo.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of mellow stuff on here, which I enjoy now.
See, that was what I put in the notes at the end. I was like, this was not at all what I expected.
I was hoping for Freedom 90 in every song.
Yeah, exactly,
when I was
right?
When I was 13, I was expecting that the whole album.
Yeah, hear that song, and you're like, oh man, this is going to be great. You know, these are all slow piano ballads. What the hell, man? Oh, yeah.
But I like it now. I mean, love it.
Now you're like, yeah, it's a pretty good album. But again, like, you know, the focus of saying that he's going to do what makes him happy, not what his label says, not what MTV says, not what an agent wants him to do. That solo with that gentle wah guitar into that unforgettable bridge. Man, the notes this guy hits. I keep saying, we did not appreciate this guy. I kept saying it. And what I really am pissed off about, this is really sort of the last album in America that hits for him. After that, he's just gone.
Yeah.
And I was listening to some of the stuff that he made. We Were Stupid. Like, there are some great songs after this album as well. And his voice, he never lost it.
No.
Well, yeah, the time period too. I mean, the Seattle grunge thing.
Oh yeah, and that, like, killed everything.
Literally a year later.
Yeah.
And when this came out too, a lot of that dance music was what was
Yeah, it was
popular.
Hitting. Yeah. Well, that was another thing I noticed. I got some, also, I don't know if you heard it, NXS vibes on some of the tracks too. The slower ones.
Is NXS on this list from Rolling Stone?
No.
No.
Another band, one of my favorites.
Yeah. Apple missed the boat on that one, because I was like, Shabu Shaba is one of the best records ever recorded. What do you do there? Press play. The swing, play. Welcome to Wherever You Are, play. I'm like, in fact, I would argue the worst album that I have of NXS is the one that was their biggest hit, Kick. The singles kill. The rest of the album's kind of filler. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Welcome to Wherever You Are, that's another album we slept on. Came out in the grunge period. And they even tried to, I was reading, they tried to make it heavier because of the grunge thing. But it's like, yeah, but you're NXS.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that the one with Heaven Sent?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say X from 91 was their last pretty decent album, even though I didn't like the lead-off single.
Yeah, Suicide Blonde.
I never cared for
that one. Yeah, yeah. It's a...
Had better songs, like Disappear was a better song, Mystify.
No, I like the harmony there, like that. Yeah. But once it...
Bitter Tears was in that
one. Yeah, the Suicide Blonde, the way the chords progress in that song was always... irks me. They missed something there. But see, for me, I loved Welcome to Wherever You Are. I sit there and I still say it's one of the most underrated albums, period, in rock and roll. Mm. I'm like, people should really get one to listen, because it's a press play. Now, ironically, they screwed up, because the album does hit outside of here.
Okay.
And they say, hell no, we're going to, because I think they're trying to finish up a record contract with Atlantic, because they're really pissed off at this point. So they quickly rush out Full Moon, Dirty Hearts. That ain't much of a record. It's cool that Ray Charles is on it, but I can do without most of it. But they wanted to do a tour of both of those albums at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I'm like, okay, you got a 30-something minute album here with two really weird songs on it, and then the Ray Charles song. And it does, none of it sounds like NXS. And then, luckily, though, their final album, Elegantly Wasted, killer record. Mm. They went out with a bang. So, speaking of going out, I guess we're going to They Won't Go When I Go. Now, this is a cover.
I didn't even know that at the time.
Yeah. I believe it's Stevie Wonder.
Mm-hmm.
So... Piano opener, wet mic that just lets George sing. Again, the samples of his voice make the chorus. The effortless control. I just say this over and over again. From low to high, soft to loud. It's just unreal. Like, I couldn't find anything like that he was a trained singer. Like, I know his parents were musicians.
Yes.
Because apparently Andrew would come over to his house all the time, and they would just, you know, fart around. It's crazy. Andrew was right, though. Yogg was something special. Another thing, I don't know if you heard it, there's so much pain in his voice in this particular song. And I said, if this song doesn't give you the feels, you are in fact dead inside. So, yeah, this performance was something special. And I don't think Stevie Wonder could ever complain about how George took this song.
Yeah, it's a great cover.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Listening to it now, like I said earlier, yeah. When I, after Freedom 90, I was like, what's this?
Yeah. You know, why are all these songs so slow?
It was like a buzzkill. I was like, yeah. Oh, it's very mellow now.
Right.
Well, I was saying, like my issue when I first got Disintegration by The mm-hmm. Cure, like now it's my favorite album of all time. Mm-hmm. When I got it, I'm like, oh, every song is so damn slow. And it was like, there's like pictures of you, then you go to Love Song, then you go to Fascination Street, then Disintegration, that's all that's good. Now I'm like, you're an idiot. It's like, there ain't a bad song on this album, you dumbass.
Yeah, the thing I liked about having this on CD originally was I bought my first CD player in the summer of 1990.
Nice.
So this was one of the first albums I bought. It came in the foot and a half box. And I remember the end cap of it, too. It kind of drew me towards it. Because the album art, mm-hmm. I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was back when they were putting the CDs in the big boxes.
Yeah, in the big boxes, yeah.
That was kind of cool. Probably wasteful, but it was kind of cool.
It was wasteful, yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, once you unwrapped it and you threw it away, whatever.
I kept some of mine. Yeah. I used to have this one, but I guess I got rid of it.
Because, mine, I could never open them up right.
Hmm.
Right. But yeah, it was a great cover. Then it goes into Something to Save. I got a little bit of a Britpop build in the intro. The bass is placed nicely with the acoustic guitar, the strings. And then again, I say, how does George make his voice move like this? I'm convinced the material of the song doesn't matter if George is singing it at this point. You could give him a song to tell him, hey, those are the instructions to Pantene shampoo. I'm going to need you to drop a track on it. And I feel like he could have done it.
I got Queen vibes from this one, too.
Oh, yeah,
the acoustic
definitely.
Guitar, like a 39 kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
You said bassist. I looked it up because I remember seeing who played bass for him, I guess, in his solo career. It was the same guy that was in Wham.
Yeah. And if you also notice, there's a lot of George playing instruments on this record, too.
The Andrew we've been talking about, Andrew Ridgely, the other half of Wham.
Yeah.
Because that name has come up.
Yeah, because he was like, he can't play instruments.
Hey!
So, and I love the I Have that is faded out in the background about towards the end. The production of the song is beautiful. Like, this, it's a master class. I can't
great
really.
Song.
Yeah, I don't have anything. You're not going to hear me say anything bad about this album. Sorry. It was more like it was a love fest today.
Oh.
So, Cowboys and Angels was my next track.
That was cool.
Synth piano opener. You were talking about slow, right? Mm. I said, I'm honestly surprised about how many slower paced songs are on this album considering the single.
This is one I skipped back in the day.
Yeah. And I said, this song really sounds like Wham, but slowed down. It has a nice jazz swing, though. George breathlessly sings. The bass on this song is the most present of any that I've heard on this album so far. I remember reading in Andrew's book that this was also the song that he learned Yogg could, in fact, play instruments. So even more so than he let on back in their school days. Because apparently I think he would fart around on the drums.
Okay.
Because his dad was a drummer, I believe. So... but it definitely has that jazzy, breathy, it's jazzy, it's breathy, but like almost of careless whisper. Mm-hmm. That's where I was going with it. And the saxophone, of course, being on there as well.
I looked up the saxophone player. He also played with Duran Duran and Dexy's Midnight Runners.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Thought that was interesting.
But what I liked is on this time, the saxophone just sounds so huge and so warm, even though it's so gently played. It's just amazing.
Yeah, this song too is also on a double best of his that came out 20 years ago. I didn't listen to it too much back then, but you know.
It's like a white cover.
Yeah, it's got a white cover. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the best of George Michael.
Yeah, this song is on that.
Yeah. That's what it was.
And now we are going to Waiting for the Day, and You Can't Always Get What You Want.
Oh.
They have to give... have to give him credit because he definitely stole the guitar part for sure.
George. No.
It's like, yeah, you're gonna have to do them. Two samples in this song. Yep. One's Ashley's Roach clip by the Soul Searchers, which has been sampled to death. And then there was the James Brown mm-hmm. sample.
Yeah, that beat's been in so many songs. Yeah,
both of them. Yeah. They're just over and over. I'm like, there was a whole, there's a YouTuber who literally goes through and just explains where you've heard the sample before. Mm-hmm. His video for Ashley's Roach clip is forever long.
That many.
It's just like, Oh, Porcelain by Moby, huh? No way. And he's like, no, check it out. Yeah, slow down.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm like, oh, man. Dang on.
It's back when they sampled in more of a tasteful way and actually manipulated the sound rather than just...
Yeah.
Nowadays.
So I'm like, are these samples just not the most used samples ever? So, like I said, this song also really reminds me of some of the slower In Excess songs, which I guess makes sense considering the band considered the Rolling Stones their biggest influence. And again, George is just absolutely wearing out a microphone. And I think this is the point where I was just like, yep, I'm calling it. George was and is the best male singer in pop music. Yeah. I don't think it's even close. It's embarrassing how much better he is than anyone I've ever heard.
I remember this song being on the radio back then too. I think there was it was on MTV. There was a video for it.
So yeah, no, this is where I'm into it. So I guess he's got to go into the ode to his own mom, right? Mother's Pride, that synth piano, the flute synths, George's voice. George, this is what I think I noticed. George can sing so well, you don't even notice how sparse a lot of the album really is.
Okay.
His voice is more than enough to hold on to. You know, this is where the albums differed. I don't feel like Elton's voice could carry the tune. It just, his piano can carry the tune. But his voice couldn't. In this case, George can absolutely keep you captivated, interested, and wondering what's next, because his voice is just so unbelievably good.
It's so effortless for him, even in that, where you can compare them on that live Don't Let the Sun Go Down.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's not to put down Elton at all, but you can tell George is like, he could probably do it in his sleep.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it's so unreal to me. It just doesn't even sound like he's trying. And he's just, I'm like, he's all over the place in terms of notes and dynamics, and it doesn't sound like he's out of place anywhere. It's just unreal. And I think that's where I got lost when you say not being a lyrics guy. Sometimes I get focused in on the lyrics, sometimes I get focused in on something. The only thing I'm really focused in is not really the lyrics or the music. I'm just sitting there, I'm like, damn, this voice. This is something. Here's another one. We're going to go back to Wham. Mm. And I do believe that Andrew Ridgely is uncredited, but I believe he plays a little bit of guitar on this track. Uncredited. Heal the Pain. So in a sense, I guess it's kind of a Wham song. A nod somewhat to Brazilian jazz. Gives me some reminders of Club Tropicana.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you've heard the mashup. There is a mashup of Club Tropicana.
Hold on.
With Slayer.
Yep, I knew you. He's always sending me these things.
Oh man, it's amazing.
He finds a few of them like this.
Pack your bags for the war.
It works actually really well. It's funny. I was like, oh God, he sent that to me the first time.
Oh, is it it's like, what is something Death Tropicana? Death. Whatever.
And when they switch it up and you hear the Wham parts, but you're seeing Slayer on the video.
Oh, man. That's a kill. I'm like, that should be on an album.
Maybe we'll do a podcast episode one day about mashups.
That one might be my number two all-time favorite. The only one I liked better was the September with Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah,
that was actually because that one hits. I was like, why does this work? Why? Yeah, it does.
Oh, yeah, check out on YouTube.
Yeah, it's crazy.
With Wham and Slayer.
There's several, by the
there
way.
Are.
There's several Wham and Slayer mashups, and they all seem to work.
Yeah, I read up on this song when I was just looking online for mm-hmm. some information, and it said that he wrote this song thinking of, like, Paul McCartney, format-wise.
I could hear that.
Okay. And it's on this box set, but apparently he re-recorded it with Paul McCartney in 2005.
Hmm.
And,
really? I could see that working.
It, yeah, there's a version with Paul McCartney singing it.
Yeah.
On there?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, okay. In the 70s with Wings, he was definitely interested in a little bit more in the funk, the Brazilian jazz, some of the tropical sides of music as well. Paul McCartney and Wings. I could hear it. Because I definitely get a tropical vibe from this particular song.
Yeah, I was making sure I was correct about that. I also got Queen, but before I found out about the Paul McCartney thing, I was getting Queen News of the World vibes.
Oh, from for sure.
The feel of like the
for
vocally,
sure. Yeah.
Like the background vocals. I was like, that could have been something that could have been
sure.
on News of the World.
Yeah.
That's a good call.
Yeah. The way he used, yeah, the vocal loops for the harmonies. Oh, man, yeah, I could hear that. This is where I was remarking that they're definitely flexing the digital recording of the time. Considering that how new that technology had to have been, like, they're using a DAW digital audio workstation, which, shoot, at that time, had to have been a big monstrous machine that you did this and you played with that, and there was a tiny little screen up on the top, that something like they had. I remember when I was at WFLS when they showed their digital workstation. I'm like, you know, a laptop can do all of this for considerably less money. Mm-hmm. And probably just as well, but they, there's no issue here. I don't, did this album not sound, I didn't have any issues.
No.
I thought this album sounds warm and inviting.
Yeah, definitely.
Because a lot of the first digital albums, you can tell, you did. And I think, obviously now they've learned how the digital works, and everyone's can EQ it the way it needs to.
Right.
Put the microphones where they need to. Understand where things work in the mix. But yeah, this is great. The staging. This is where I really noticed the staging. You could feel like the drums behind George, the bass right. to the side, the guitar. Just everything was. I felt like I was hearing a concert.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, George plays the guitar solos on this song.
Really.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Which I said was odd because George was fake playing on the Faith video, and here he is playing the guitar.
All right.
Which, by the way, is a killer single. I want to point that out. Faith.
Oh yeah.
That's
even love the intro.
Yeah, that's got to be a top 10, I think, 80s single. Period.
I listened to a lot of Casey Kasem back then. That was the number one song of, was that 88?
87, 88, something like
it
that.
It was the number one song of the year.
I would, yeah, it's...
What
it's,
a way to come out with, like, hey, I'm going solo now.
And then he comes out with, yeah, a banger.
And but not it is what very, you probably expect.
Yeah, but it's very different than Wham, because you get that first Wham record, which is Club Tropicana,
yes.
And it's kind of goofy. No, yes. And then you get, you know, you still get some goofy stuff later, like Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
But, and yeah, that's such a well-written song. It's so poppy.
But then you get into Careless... Yeah.
Make It Big is a great...
Yeah, you get into Careless Whisper, which is basically, is what Andrew said, it's Wham and Name Only. That's a George song.
Guilty Feet Have Gotten a Rhythm. What a line.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, that is... That's where you could tell where George was moving.
Yes.
And...
And yeah, you're right, because wasn't that around the time they were wanting to credit as George Michael and Wham?
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. Well, and I was reading
around
Andrew,
Whisper.
Yeah, Andrew was sitting there waiting, apparently, for George to say, I need to go solo.
Yeah.
He said he knew he was along for the ride. He said, from the get-go, I knew this was a part-time gig. I am not the star of this. This is George's show. And he was saying something along the lines of when he heard Careless Whisper for the first time, it was kind of like, he knew. Yeah. It's like, all right, he's ready to fly and be a star. And then yeah, we get Face, and now we get Heal the Pain, and yeah, we move on to
this one single by Andrew Ridgeley, what's called Shake.
Yeah. Awesome. Soul Free Caribbean drums, yeah. Dub beat, very early 90s sound on the synths.
Yep.
Definitely, like when you hear that era, this is this song is of that era.
Yeah, it's very 1990.
I mean, it's dated. Yeah. It's still good, but it's dated. It's one of the, I think one of the two up tempo songs on this album.
Yeah, this is what I expected the whole album to be, was this song,
and Freedom.
I love the flute on it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely one that I gravitated to, especially re-listening to it now.
Oh yeah. The album, I just said, just sounds really good. I'm getting those vibes of something you would hear at a school dance back when I was at that age. George uses the falsetto very well.
Mm-hmm.
But this one's interesting because the song is more up-tempo, but this is probably the one song where George is very reserved on his vocals. Because, I mean, usually, usually he's going all over the place. Mm-hmm. This one, he's like, eh, I'll stay here. And then we'll get to the next track, and he'll wear out the microphone again. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I don't have anything else to add for that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the closer, Waiting, Reprise, wet acoustic guitar, wet mic for George Michael, the voice. That's all you need to take away from this song. The voice. Just listen to what's coming out of your headphones, your speakers.
Heck, other than the spaces, I mean, it'd be cool to hear a George Michael acapella album.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to hear, like, let's hear the vocal tracks just...
Yeah.
How do they sound? So you could really just hear that presence.
Like one of those things, like that box set that broke down the parts for Pet Sounds. Doing for a George Michael album.
Interesting enough, I have Power in Numbers by Jurassic 5. I have the lead single.
They do? Uh-huh.
And they put track one is the vocal, track two is like the bass, track three is...
It's the whole song together.
The whole song. If you put it all together, it's the whole song.
You had to do it yourself.
But yeah, they give you all the tracks.
Oh, that rhymes to way of that Flaming Lips.
The Zyreka album.
Yeah. Four discs.
No. And now that I've tried to do it, and no.
No. Okay. No. Anyway, back to George.
Yeah. But the notes here. That he's wearing out his microphone. On this, his presence on a mic just doesn't exist in anyone, period. I'm going on and on about it. I think I said I made note of his voice on all 10 tracks. That's how good of a singer he was. He's just belting out the notes. We want to say anything else on that other than the fact that, holy crap.
Yeah, I remember when I heard it for the first time when I was 13, I was expecting another Faith
part
two, and that's why I think I was disappointed. You know, 35 years later, it's...
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Just, you know, that's what I like about it now, is that it's different.
It's not Faith.
And I forgot until I saw it recently. It said Volume 1, and I read up on it. Apparently, it was supposed to be a Volume 2, which I guess because of poor sales, some of the other singles he had, like, a year or two later, I guess
we're going to be on two.
Well, see, that was the thing.
And they were all on tempo, like Too Funky, some other stuff that was on the Red Hot and Dance.
Well, see, that collections. Was the thing. I was, he was telling me about singles, and I'm like, there were other singles? Because the only one that I could ever remember was Freedom 90.
Well, like I said, I don't know if I remember hearing on the radio, but I do remember the first video. It was like today's YouTube lyric videos was Praying for Time.
Yeah, Praying for Time, Freedom 90, and... Waiting for That Day, I remember that being on the radio.
But you're right, it was all Freedom 90.
Freedom 90 is the only one that's still around that people think about.
I mean, that one stuck out. And for me, what really sticks out on that video is when the jacket burns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
That's a yeah. statement right there.
I mean, well, I know he was so pissed off that he didn't even want to appear in the video. He was like,
oh, yeah. sure.
Whatever. You can do whatever you want.
Isn't he like in like the last...
I think he appears
like
in the...
He's looking like he was the one that was directing the whole thing.
Mm. Yeah, I think he's in there for like a second, but yeah. he just absolutely refused to be in it.
And he did basically direct, because they said that the background where he's directing the different models, how to...
Yeah.
Seeing or what to yeah. do when they're moving.
Yeah, he didn't want to be seen in anything yeah. at that point. But I do remember being 13, and like I said, my first CD player, you know, before streaming, for all the young wow. kids that don't yeah. understand, no YouTube, no streaming. I had to save up a lot of money, and my purchases were very selective. And yes. I remember when I bought this, I was disappointed, because yeah. it was probably $15-16 for the for the CD. But I do remember the album cover is what made me, yeah. kind of drew me to it. And, you know, looking at it now, I'm like, oh, that looks like the 40s. So I looked yeah. it up today, and it's a picture of people at Coney Island from 1940.
Hmm.
And the photographer is some famous New York photographer. Okay. So
that's I'll
have to go down that rabbit hole a little bit later, I guess, because I'm
for
kind
sure.
of curious.
Yeah. Didn't know that.
But yeah, and in the same vein that you were saying in my final notes of this, I didn't expect this album at all. Like, I thought Freedom 90, I was like, okay, this is going to be a dance record. You know, it's not going to be Faith. And I was wrong. I'd always known that George could really sing, but this album just highlights how great of a singer he truly was. Unlike the previous albums, his voice carries several of the songs
yes.
of similar tempo. Because both of these albums had songs of slower tempos. And I just felt with Elton John, I'm like, okay, move along. Never once did I feel that way with this mm-hmm. particular album.
Yeah.
Now, maybe it's because of the fact it's only 10 songs in 48 minutes versus mm-hmm. an hour and 16 minutes in length. I'm like, dude.
It's hard to put out a double album.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. I guess Stevie Wonder gave us the blueprint, which is on the list, by the way.
Songs in the Key of Life.
Oh, my God. What a beautiful record. And then the... What's that trilogy? It's Inner Visions. Why am I freaking mm-hmm. blanking? The one that's covered on this one. Damn, why am I forgetting that? And then Songs of the Key of Life. That's like... Well, if you count that being two albums, that's mm-hmm. four albums in what span of what 3-4 years?
Yeah.
You didn't miss, and mm-hmm. that also doesn't include like Signed, Sealed, Delivered.
Mm-hmm.
I right. mean, good God!
Yeah, just, there's like different periods for Stevie.
He didn't miss in the 70s.
Little Stevie Wonder is yeah. what they call him.
He didn't miss in the 70s. There isn't one. Mm-hmm. There isn't one bad track. If you want to talk about the two artists who I think in the 70s who I'm just like. Yeah, David Bowie, Stevie Wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my go-tos.
Talking Book?
Yeah, Talking Book. Yeah.
Is that the other one?
No.
No? I'm looking at them.
It's got like a weird name to it.
Oh, the Fullingnick's first finale?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I just butchered
yep,
that title.
So, I guess...
oh, yeah. So, hey.
I guess we got to wrap it up, right?
Oh, man. Thought we were going to do Make It Big.
I haven't done any more research, sorry.
Let's do it on the fly, see how we do. Make it up before you go.
No,
I'm just kidding.
I ramble. If this is what I do prepared, imagine what I would sound like not prepared.
Oh, dear.
Thank you for letting me sit.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome anytime if you want to shoot the crap and talk some music.
We had the key to the door. We tried to keep him out. No, I'm kidding.
I love talking music.
We
all do. Hey!
The album today, of course, the first one I feel like was a journey in storytelling.
Yes.
Mood, dramatics, and theater. The dramatics and the theater of the last album, though. Holy shit. My main gripe is Yellow Brick Road again. It's way too many songs that sound the same, and at least one that had no business ever being on the album. George Michael was 10 songs, no filler. Straight and to the point, 9.9 out of 10. It's a great record.
What keeps it away from a 10?
Aretha Franklin made a killer record in 1967.
Oh, it's based on the other one. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
That's
okay. I thought something about his album.
No.
Do you remember the George Michael or Aretha Franklin song?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big...
I mean, but the... Aretha Franklin's I've Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You whoa, was my mind blown. So that's why this is a 9.9 out of 10.
Gotcha. It didn't compare to other albums.
Okay. I mean, and that's not a fair fight, though. So what I'd liked is Elton shows his abilities on the piano. I feel like his piano playing really improves on this album over some of the ones I'd heard previous. Definitely the blueprint for his future success. And then I kind of got bummed because I was looking at it, and then I was looking at the success numbers for George. This is his last major hit. Mm. Like, he doesn't, at least in the States, he has hits across the pond. Mm-hmm. He has nothing here. Like, we just swept him away, forgot about him. And I marked, I forgot about him too. And I feel we lost him way too early. So I think it was liver disease. But you know what? The good news is we're always going to have that music. We're always going to have those recordings. And his voice, I don't think you can ever replicate it. It's such a unique instrument, his voice. I love that. Folks, next week, we're going to be preparing for St. Patrick's Day.
Uh-oh.
So therefore, we've got to be stereotypical. U2's on the list, I believe, at 48.
Okay.
The Joshua Tree.
Oh.
So I've got nothing better to pair it with, because nothing on the list pairs with this album.
We could do like last week.
Silver doing Octoon Baby.
Oh, this was that one. Okay.
Yes.
Never mind. Yeah, like not never mind. That sounds bad after last.
Yeah, never mind in 10. Yeah. So.
No, I meant never mind. Other. I was trying to think of other artists.
Yes. So I couldn't think of anything that it works with. So I was like, well, we could put it with the Clash, but then you're gonna have a Henry Rollins fan get mad at you. Henry Rollins said, "But Enya didn't make the list, did she?"
Did Octoon Baby? Oh, no. Is the art? No, I'm only thinking because Bono and her are actually neighbors. That's funny to me.
Yeah.
What do you think of Discotheque by U2?
Oh. You can answer that right now. Because
right. There were some good songs on
See, this is my thing.
Oh, pop.
Yeah. When we get into pop, all right, I'm going to tell you right now, I think pop is 10 times the album Europa is. Mm. I think that album, third worst in their list. All right. The first worst one is... October. That album sucks. And even with some of the riffs on it that are great.
Okay.
You go from Boy, and then you come firing right back with War, thank God. But October sucked.
And Pop is an example of why you don't set deadlines before you finish your album.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You build the tour, and then you're like, oh, yeah, we should probably record an album, guys. And then at the time, of course... You know, Bono is apparently drinking himself stupid with Michael Hutchence. They're going back and forth to Australia and Ireland, shooting the crap with each other. And they kept saying, we need to get Bono in the studio. They're like, where is he? Australia.
I think Staring at the Sun was the best song off of there.
Yeah, it's that's a great track.
John Lennon vibes on that.
Speaking of which, you know they covered Happiness is a Warm Gun on that album. Oh, they didn't release it.
Oh, okay.
It's a B-side. But I was thinking of other albums. The one that they gave away for free. That's a terrible album.
Vertigo?
No. There's two albums after. That's two albums post that.
Yeah.
Was it one of the Songs of.
Song? Albums? Yeah, it's the start of the Songs of. Mm. What's that one? The Songs of Innocence, I believe.
Okay.
I think. The one with the Joey Ramone song on there. And as terrible as that song is, it might be one of the best on the album. Oh man, that album sucked. And then they that last pile of garbage that they're trying to pass off as something you should buy, the songs of
with all the covers,
songs of Buy My Record, We Need Money, It's Christmas Time.
Wait, the ones that were the reworking their
stuff? Terrible.
You didn't like any of those for reworking?
Terrible. Oh. And there's a couple of songs on there, but
I lost interest after 2000.
Yeah,
whatever that album was.
That All That You Can't Leave Behind.
Yeah, that was good one that I thought.
There's a few good tracks on that. Now, I will say this, the remastered version of How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb, that's how that album should have sounded to begin with.
Mm-hmm. It does sound very good.
Yes. It's amazing what happens when you take the compression off some of those songs.
What?
You mean to tell me if you turn the volume down and just let those instruments breathe a little bit? What a shocker. It sounds like a rock record. because they kept saying it's a rock album, it's a rock album, and I kept hearing no, because it was so compressed, it just sounded like a pop record. And now you hear it, you're like, yeah, it's a rock record. And even if you listen to it, if you're an earbuds person, set your iPhone to Atmos. The Atmos mix on that is totally worth your time. Okay. But you have to have the Atmos stuff. If not, we've got off track again, guys. And you've got a whole, week next week to talk about you too, right?
Seeing him rising up at the tour for
my God.
Damian Marley.
Oh, man, that was a killer show.
Okay, yeah, you're right. This is next
week. We've got plenty of time. I mean, I can U2 all day. I can fanboy it. I can tell you what I really like and why it's good, and I can tell you why I hate it, which is ironic because there is an album, No Line on the Horizon.
Yes.
That's their best opening. That album has their best opening track, period. There is no better opener of U2 than that album, than what's on that album.
Really?
But it also has Get on Your Boots. And then there's the song after it, which really pisses you off because it opens up with, oh man, this is going to be the next fly because Edge is just killing this riff. And then it...
That's the point.
Then it just sucks.
Because we saw that tour too, right? The Spaceship. And they opened with Breathe. Wasn't that one of them from that album?
Yeah, because that was the moment of surrender. Like, we saw that one. That was the like Elevate.
Talking or something.
What was it?
Because then I listened to the album.
The 360 tour.
I didn't like the album version of that, though. The one that he opened with Breathe or whatever.
Yeah.
Did War have Two Hearts Beat as one?
Yep.
Love that song.
That's a killer. Oh, War's just like a song.
I love the bells on that album.
Yeah. Like a song. That's a killer track. Seconds. Shoot. The whole album. That's my second favorite U2 record. We're going to go over my favorite next week, but number two is War. Okay. Joshua Tree's on the list, and it's not number one or number two. So, but I will say this, the B-side of Joshua Tree is very strong. If they were to release that as an EP, because you start off with Red Hill Mining Town. I mean, that's a strong track. So, all right, folks. you're just getting a preview of what I'm going to ramble on about U2 next week.
Oh,
man.
I think I got to work.
I guess, I don't know if we can call this the Trash Rocket Show today. This is more like the two-thirds of Puff Yeah.
Or one half of Puff Yeah. No, it's a four-person version.
Yeah, I mean, or one half, yeah. So
the rhythm half, all that matters.
I guess with that being
just
said,
kidding.
I guess with that being said, I'm Triggered for Hodge and John.
Hello.
We'll see you all next time.